Well, Len, you can tell that summer is getting close to arriving in the Chicago area. Golf season is picking up around here, and tournaments are starting to happen. And this past week, we had the Korn Ferry Tour in town over at the Glen Club in Glenview. And I think it was a really good week. Unfortunately, the weather didn't cooperate much on Thursday afternoon and Friday, but it got better on the weekend. The people came out. Some of the local guys like Nick Hardy, Patrick Flavin, Vince India had pretty good weeks. Andy Pope and Brad Hopfinger also making the cut. So we had our share of locals that had a pretty good week. And I think a lot of people just enjoyed coming out and walking around the golf course and seeing some of our local players do pretty good.
You know, I thought it was an absolutely terrific week from the standpoint of golf for that. For our guys on that tour, you know, that tour has been, if you count the years as the Ben Hogan Tour and Nationwide and Web.com, that tour has been going on for 32 years. And most of those years, Chicago did have a tournament. And not every one, but most of them. But there has never, in that whole span, have that many Chicago guys been being a real factor in the tournament with Nick and with Patrick tying for fifth. I mean, that was great. It's too bad one of them didn't win. Vince India with the Northwestern guys, Lipsky, Brad Hopfinger, Andy Pope made a check. It was really showed that these are guys that can play. I mean, we haven't even had that many in Chicago on that tour until this year. And they all had a real good showing there. Even Luke Guthrie, the former University of Illinois player, he had gone 23 tournaments in a row, but missing all the cuts, and he came back with a tie for, I believe it was a tie for 18th. So all in all, for the players that we are most familiar with in the Chicago market, it was a banner week. You know, it should be a real boost for Patrick Flavin. He'll play again this week in Raleigh, by finishing the top 25 last week on a sponsor's exemption. If he has a good tournament there, he might just accumulate enough points to play out the rest of the season. And, of course, Nick Hardy, he looks at it for the PGA Tour in about another 2 months. So, all in all, a great week at the Evans Scholar Invitational.
Well, there definitely was a lot more people out there this time around. Whether it was the fact that the local kids had an influence there or not is remains to be seen, but I think a lot of people just enjoyed getting out on the weekend when the weather got a little nicer, getting a little exercise, marching around the Glen Club, and it was, I think, a good time had by all. There was a lot of people up near the clubhouse that were enjoying some food and beverage as well, watching the action on the 18th green, a very spectacular 18th hole that leads into the clubhouse there over at the Glen Club. Glad that Patrick Flavin will be playing this week in North Carolina. Nick Hardy has the week off and was going to spend it here with friends, family, working with his coach on his game, and then getting ready for the U.S. Open qualifier next Monday. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. He was prepared to go to Arizona last night if the University of Illinois was playing in the national championship today. And unfortunately, they are not. They really had the best quarterfinal match of any of the four matches yesterday morning in their 3-2 defeat to the Oklahoma Sooners, who look right now possibly is the team to beat. They're in the championship match against Pepperdine, and Pepperdine's been playing some great golf, but it was surprising to see the way that Oklahoma had to fight back against Illinois. They were down 2-0 to Arizona State yesterday afternoon, had to fight back and win every single match to advance, and won a couple of those matches on the 18th green to do so. So it'll be interesting, this afternoon's match between Pepperdine and Oklahoma. But as for Illinois, you know, I can see Mike Small has to be proud of his kids, the way they came together and fought hard and made the match play. But I know he would have liked to advance further and still be playing today. Illinois had an opportunity, but give Oklahoma credit. They fought back from being in an early hole to Illinois to come back and take that match.
Yeah, the Illinois, the three matches they lost, all were lost on unusually enough on the 17th hole. So they were good matches. I mean, the two Illinois Stars that won big, and then all they needed to get was one more match. But, you know, sooner or later, Illinois has been so close so long, and they played in 13 straight NCAA finals. Sooner or later, their number's got to come up, and they've got to win that thing. It'd be a shame if Mike Small's teams, you know, as good as they've been and consistent as they've been, before Mike is done, he's going to have an NCAA title, and you're sure of it.
I know that Mike will continue to recruit all the best players wherever he can find them, whether it's in Illinois, it's in America, or even abroad. They will attempt to reload that program and get right back after it again next year. I found it a little ironic, Len, that the University of Oklahoma coach, they teased him a little bit for wearing a vested sweater yesterday out on the golf course in 100 and 103 degree heat. And he said it was sort of his lucky sweater that he had worn at Rich Harvest Farms, actually, when Oklahoma beat Illinois in the Final Four there, and then, of course, went on the next day to win the national championship in a victory over Oregon. So the lucky sweater vest from Rich Harvest Farms in 2017 finally resurfaced, and I wonder if their coach will have it on again today. Brandon Heidel will wear that lucky sweater from Rich Harvest Farms again today.
Well, I guess whatever works. And I think Illinois' key is to just avoid getting paired against Oklahoma. They seem to not be snake bit for one reason or another against that team. It made for a good sidebar, the sweater vest story for the Oklahoma coach. You got to hope Oklahoma wins now, because they're the team that knocked you out and make you look better. So best of luck to the Sooners. I'm amazed at how good Oklahoma golf is, having gone to school in the University of Missouri. And, that was thought of in that country there. Oklahoma State and Oklahoma were football powers. But they've had much more success in golf than they've had in football in recent years. So, I'll be interested in how the final comes out.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how that championship match plays out today. Speaking of match play, we have some drama that unfolded at the LPGA Match Play Championship this past week in Las Vegas. It was nice to see the gals get to go out and play Shadow Creek, but they ended up having a few days of golf in around 100 to 102 degree heat. And it led for some drama, especially on the final day when the third place match was forfeited. Len Zeem, what did you think about that when there was a sudden withdrawal and there was no match for TV?
Yeah, well, poor TV, you know. But, I can understand the players' view. And you know, U.S. Women's Open's coming up. They're playing in hot weather. I guess she gave up $24,000, I think, is what happened there, Shan-Shan Fenn.
Yes.
It's a hard one for me to criticize the player's decision on this particular thing. I mean, this is an older player. What do? Do you go out there and let him beat you 10 and 8 or something? You know, I think that she had the right to do what she did. I mean, she's going to get criticized for it, and I'm sure the TV people didn't like it. I don't have the answer to how to correct the problem for them. You know, it's one of those things that I don't think there's a right answer for. It's match play golf. I think I'll tell you, I like to watch match play golf. And an incident like this, I would think it would make all the networks reluctant to stage a full-blown match play tournament if there's the danger of a player not showing up or not playing and leaving the airtime kind of blank. So it's probably something that's going to have a long-term effect. But yet, you know, I can't really fault the player who withdrew either.
The fact that both of her previous matches had gone long. In the last two rounds, the other players had played less than 36 holes, and she had to play over 40. And it takes a toll on you in the heat. And the thing is, too, the players are going to have to make an adjustment, because this week they're not just heading to a tour stop. They're heading to the U.S. Women's Open at the Olympic Club in San Francisco. And the weather report says the high for the week at the Olympic Club is going to be 61 degrees, and these players could be playing two rounds of golf in the upper 50s. And that, do you want to play in one of the biggest tournaments of the year and suddenly be playing in temperatures 45 degrees less than you were in the previous week? That can drain you a little bit, and, you know, the U.S. Open drains you a lot anyway.
The challenge of getting to play Olympic is going to be the story of the day at the U.S. Women's Open. I mean, they've wanted to. This is a course that's hosted a ton of men's big tournaments, and I know the women have wanted to get themselves on courses like that of that reputation. Now they got their chance, and I think they're going to have their hands full with Olympic. I know I covered a U.S. Open there I believe Lee Jansen won the title, but when Payne Stewart they had a strange setting for the 18th hole pin placement, and poor Payne Stewart had a lipped out a putt, and it rolled all the way back to his feet. So it's a memorable tournament. It's a very difficult course. I think it's great the women are playing these kind of courses, but I think that'll be more of a factor in the tournament than the weather will be.
Well, the weather could be a factor. I remember playing there in mid-May once at the Olympic Club. It goes back about 20 years, but I had a 9:30 in the morning tee time with the members that I was playing with, and we couldn't see the first green from the first tee. The fog was so bad, we had to hit our drive and hope that we were going to find the golf ball when we got out there, because the visibility was at about 150 yards. And, you know, you just wonder if fog delays could creep up on the tournament this week and set tee times back a couple of hours. So there could be a weather problem, Len. It just may not be the temperature. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. We have more news from the world of the LPGA. A brand new commissioner, Molly Marcoux-Simon, is the new LPGA commissioner with big shoes to fill, replacing Michael Wan, who's moved on to the USGA. Marcoux comes from the Ivy League and Princeton University, and there's some people that are questioning whether or not this was the best decision. Apparently, she has a strong background in athletics, not so much in golf, but it'll be interesting to see how her time as LPGA commissioner goes for the tour.
I'm one of those who's questioning this selection, and I have nothing against the winner here. But Princeton is not the LPGA. They have very different needs, the naming of this lady didn't do anything to create excitement. I mean, nobody has jumped up and said, "Wow, well, now we needed a higher profile person on that job." I mean, Mike Wan, he has been maybe the best commissioner in all sports. I think he ranks right up there. That right now, you know, he created a buzz. He did wonders for the LPGA. I just don't see this one. I don't want to seem negative towards the individual. However, what the LPGA needs is a higher profile, and I don't see that happening by hiring the athletic director at Princeton. We'll see. Give her a chance. Got to see what happens. But a strange hire in my book.
Well, Len, the one thing we can say about people coming from colleges is more often than not, every athletic department at colleges across the country today, whether you're Division I, II, III, NAIA, whoever you are, there's a lot of people in those departments that are working really hard to recruit dollars. And if she has had a successful track record in fundraising for the department, maybe she can help bring in sponsors and bigger dollars for purses around the tour. So that could be a benefit. Hopefully that's one of her strong points that she will bring to this new job with the LPGA. Also, talking new jobs, Brian Tulk has left the Royal Golf Group here locally and takes over as the head professional and the general manager over at Klein Creek in Winfield. And it'll be interesting that club got new ownership just before the pandemic hit. And it'll be interesting to see what they want to do with that property going forward.
Yeah, best of luck to Brian there. I mean, that That course is, it's got a good location. But it's, as I remember that course, it was a Dick Nugent design, I think, that was unusual in that it didn't have a range, but, and it had a opening tee shot out of bounds right and water out of bounds left and water right.
There you go.
Tough way to start. Tough way to start around with that kind of a challenge without a warm-up shot. But, best of luck to Brian there. I mean, we that course has been there for a while. It's been years since I've played it, so I may have the layout wrong. I mean, I played it a bit when it opened, I think several times in the first year, and it was fun to play, other than I thought the choice of the first hole was a little asking a lot for the players who would play there to face that kind of an opening tee shot. But again, best of luck to Brian Tulk on his new job.
Well, the last thing you want to do is put your opening shot in the drink. And speaking of water on the first hole, we can find water on the first hole at the brand new 12-hole par 3 course in Kohler called the Bats, and the grand opening is tomorrow. And there'll be some opening remarks from Herb Kohler and everybody, the Kohler golf team and other people involved in the project. I'll be up there for it and looking forward to the grand opening of this this new project and new golf course that ought to bring some, even more golfers than normal up to the American Club and Destination Kohler.
Oh, I envy you the trip. I envy you the visit there. I'm looking forward to leaving Florida and getting up to the Midwest again. And that, of course, Kohler, I'm like you there. I think that Black Wolf One and the Straits and all those, I think they're just a great place to go and as a golf destination. So this is only going to add a new dimension to what they've built over there. And it looks like it's going to be a real nice addition. So I'll look forward to hearing what your reviews of it are.
You think Wisconsin, and you can't help but think about the Ryder Cup coming up to Kohler in September. And, you know, Len, we didn't talk much about this at all really last week, but when you look at the point standings now, Phil Mickelson is back in the hunt to potentially making the Ryder Cup team. And according to some comments on Twitter, Davis Love III, an assistant captain to Steve Stricker, says that he and Steve Stricker have had several conversations already about whether Phil Mickelson makes the Ryder Cup team. Now, right now, he doesn't have enough points to be an automatic selection, but he's lurking in the area, so to speak, of where Steve Stricker might want to go for one of his six captain's picks. And I'm trying to remember the last time the PGA of America did not put its reigning PGA champion on the team. And I'm thinking John Daly at Crooked Stick in 1991. Len, do you remember anybody since then? But I, more often than not, being it's a PGA of America event, the PGA Championship champion is normally on the team.
Well, there's no way Phil Mickelson won't be on the team as the PGA champion, that's for sure. I mean, he's a drawing card. I mean, if they left him off the team, given that the drama of that win in that particular tournament, it'd be beyond shocking, beyond shocking. Yeah, I can't I tell you the truth. If John Daly didn't make it, I couldn't think of who would be the last one to ever do it. I mean, that just seems like it ought to be an automatic selection if you win that title. I mean, I know it's not, but it seems like it should be. And of course, Steve Stricker, he doesn't have the usual fours or two or four or whatever it is exemptions that captains in the past have had. He's got a full six. He's picking half the team. So it's pretty easy to find a place for Phil Mickelson on this team.
Len, one of the exciting days in advance of a major championship is coming up on Monday, U.S. Open sectional qualifying. And, you know, it's amazing the amount of guys that have to go to that to potentially play in the U.S. Open. And more often than not, there's some names at all of these sites across the country that are names you see on TV on the PGA Tour during the week, but for whatever reason, they don't have status to get into the U.S. Open. And you and I have talked in the last week. Nick Hardy will be going to Ohio next Monday, trying to qualify for the U.S. Open again. He's done it a couple of times through qualifying in the past. Good friend Andy Pope, who's been a success story of getting into the U.S. Open through qualifying, is back in the mix next week. He'll be going to New York, but you know, it's one of those exciting days in golf. It's a Monday. It doesn't really get a lot of TV time, if any, maybe a little on the Golf Channel, but it is kind of an exciting day. It's all of these people trying to qualify to get in the U.S. Open. It's almost like last-minute basketball games to get in the men's NCAA field or qualify for a bowl game or something like that, but quite a shootout coming on Monday.
Well, we know that Wheaton's Kevin Streelman will be in the field. He's got his world ranking up high enough to get it an automatic spot in the 156-man field. But what'll be fun on Monday, which is always kind of, you know, it really is one of my favorite days of the year for golf. They have these the eliminations all around the country, and we have guys trying to qualify. T.K. Kelly came through the local qualifying. Brian Bullington came through the local qualifying. Daniel a Stringfellow from a Medina player. He came through the local qualifying. We're going to have a number of PGA Tour players who and Korn Ferry Tour players, for that matter, who are not qualified but do have spots in sectional play somewhere or another. Now, the big qualifier there is the one in Columbus right outside the right after the day after the Memorial Tournament ends. Two courses right near Muirfield Village traditionally host a 36-hole qualifier there. Nick Lowe will be playing in Springfield, Ohio, which is a little further away. He won't have quite the competition from the PGA Tour crowd, but it's an exciting day of golf, and we're going to have some Cinderella stories, guys making the tournament through sectional qualifier, and then, you know, usually they don't do so well in the big show, but Torrey Pines is one of them. Torrey Pines is a course where, you know, a player coming out of the, you know, non-tour ranks could make a little noise and create some excitement. So anyway, I'll certainly be following the whole shebang on for my Daily Herald column and for the Golfers on Golf Radio and all to see who all is going to go to Torrey Pines, and I'll bet you we find some interesting names there.
Yeah, I bet we will as well. You know, there's another place that, you know, people have asked me about in the last couple of days because they saw it on TV Monday, and it got an amazing amount of TV time on NBC, and maybe it's because it was on NBC, but if you watch the Indianapolis 500 on Monday, people were saying there's a golf course. It looks like a golf course in the middle of the racetrack. And there is one. It's called Brickyard Crossing. I was actually there last year. I talked to the pro a little bit, and I'm hoping to actually get out there and play the golf course. It's a real novelty of a course built by Pete Dye, and it's part of the Pete Dye Golf Trail. And you've done more of the Pete Dye Golf Trail. But for those who are asking, yes, there is a golf course, and it's next to the track, and it's in the middle of the track, and it zigzags around a little bit, but it is pretty exciting, and if you enjoy watching the race and enjoy the racing history, there's a good amount of racing history that's tied in through the golf course, but for those who have been asking and said, yeah, look like we saw a golf course in the middle of the racetrack, there is one, and Len Zeem, I believe you've played there.
I have played there. In fact, I'm dating myself, but I was I got a real nice invitation from Pete Dye back in the day when that course was just barely open. We had a very small media day there, but we played that course, and four holes are actually inside the track, and it's really an experience to listen when you play that course and they're having some time trials or something like that, and you hear the noise blasting away. It's really a cool thing. I heard that for a while there the track people wanted to get rid of the golf course because they had some other things they wanted to put there. But fortunately, they have not done that. Brickyard Crossing is really a treat to play because it's one of those golf courses that's really different. Where else do you find a place that's you actually bring you inside the golf course? I've played it since then, and I think maybe the last time was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And that's what makes Pete Dye courses are always special, but this one is more special because of being inside the racetrack. It's something a lot of people should play if they get anywhere near there.
Len, another course that apparently has officially opened now is the Folds of Honor course up in Michigan. And Jack Nicklaus was involved, and Major Dan Rooney, or he might even be a lieutenant colonel by now. I know he did get a promotion. He founded Folds of Honor up in Michigan, but apparently the golf course there has an entire new look. And he said it used to be a bowling alley golf course between the trees, but Jack Nicklaus got involved there to make this facility a little bit better, help it to raise money for Folds of Honor that supports our military veterans. But they took out a bunch of trees, exposed the golf course to some of the dunes that were there not far from the golf course, and they've opened it up, and there's some lake views. And I understand it's a really nice golf course, and now it's officially open for play, and they already have over 11,000 rounds of golf booked for the summer ahead.
Yeah, I got an invite to the grand opening, and I'm told I can take advantage of it, and we can go back to Michigan. I think we're planning a little swing through Michigan, usually in August, and I'm planning on playing it. You know, Jack Nicklaus, he donated the services of his design team in this project. He felt that strongly about it. Which was quite a nice gesture, but I haven't gotten a real take on the course itself. The spirit behind the course you can't question. I mean, that's just a great thing. So you got to hope that that this course does well just for that reason. And you know that a Jack Nicklaus course is going to be something special anyway. But I'm looking to make that trip. I'm going to make it. That's going to be. It's going to be a fun day. I know it will be, and it's just going to be a few months later for me to be there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting up there and playing the golf course myself. And in talking with my broadcast partner, Ed Stevenson, he tells me that I should stop by the new clubhouse that apparently might get open yet now this month, since we're now officially into June. And by Friday, apparently, some of the furniture is going to be in place. There'll have been a lot more work done inside the clubhouse since I was there 5-6 weeks ago. And so we're going to go through there. We're going to take some pictures. We hope to be sharing them on Golfers on Golf by next week. But the clubhouse is starting to take shape. The landscaping has been done around the clubhouse. The driveway in front of it's getting done. And I really think my guess from what I've seen in pictures so far is that the Oak Meadows Clubhouse has a realistic chance of opening in June, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen.
Yeah, that's going to be a real great addition to the Chicago golf scene, just as the redoing of the golf course there to become the preserve after its days as Elmhurst Country Club in Oak Meadows, the preserve at Oak Meadows. That's become a great addition to the Chicago golf scene. It'll be even better once the clubhouse is ready to go.
Well, and that's all the time we have for this edition of Zeman Spears Podcast Series 2021. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.